everybody, and welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we're talking lots of MLB and NFL news with our special guest. We'll break down all of the moves surrounding the MLB trade deadline, plus ask the question, who is the team to beat now that the deadline is passed? We'll also talk about the NFL, the top 100 list, and explore the controversy behind those rankings. And later in the show, we'll talk with our special guest about his amazing sports media career. Now, before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at JohnZags, on Twitter at JohnZSports, and now on Facebook at John Zaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Mucci World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Mucci World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Celebrate the team's 20th anniversary season by purchasing tickets today. Call 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. It's now time for our special guest. He began his sports media career in 1995 as the sports director at WHAG-TV in Hagerstown, Maryland. Following stints as a sports anchor in Fresno and Nashville, he took his talents to a national stage, hosting shows on Fox Sportsnet beginning in 2000. Just 4 years later, he became a part of the ESPN family, hosting Hill and Schlereth on ESPN Radio, along with various shows across the network's TV platform. After 10 years at the mothership, he's since been a host on Fox Sports One, the CEO of Thrill of Entertainment, and now soon to be married to reality TV star Cynthia Bailey. Please welcome Mike Hill to the show. Mike, how you doing today? And thank you for being here on the show.
I'm great. I'm happy to be here. Thanks, John, for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
Well, as I had mentioned, congratulations are in order first off on your recent engagement to Cynthia Bailey. And if you don't mind, how did it all happen? And what's the story behind your unique proposal?
Just a whirlwind. I met her in January of 2018. Both of us friends of Steve Harvey, and we just happened to be on the show together on this this dating game. And I went out there and didn't know what to expect. I didn't think Cynthia Bailey needed any help with dating or whatever. I didn't need any help with dating at all. Not bragging, but just the case, whatnot. So I thought it was a publicity thing. And she chose me, and the producers actually put us together, and we went on a date, and after, talking a couple of months and just being friends or whatever, we decided to get serious about it, and that was this time last year, and recently, about last week, I just decided to make her my wife and try to ask her if she wanted to be my wife, and the fact that my kids and her kid was involved, and, our families were there, man, just made it so much more special, so I'm just blessed and happy to have her in my life, man. She's one of the best things that ever happened in my career and my life.
Well, again, Mike, congratulations on your engagement. And, it's interesting because right now we're actually seeing lots of new relationships and partnerships begin to take hold in Major League Baseball following the trade deadline. And I think the most notable acquisition, the one that we should talk about first, is Zach Greinke going to the Astros for a package of prospects. How shocked were you when you found out about the news? And what does this mean for the Astros as a team moving forward?
Well, I think what it means for the Astros as a team is that they were already one of the favorites to win the World Series in the American League along with the New York Yankees. But I think this definitely gives them the clear-cut view as the top team, not only in the American League, maybe over even the Dodgers in the National League as to win another World Series championship. They already had, in my opinion, the top two pitchers in the American League this season with Verlander and Cole. And to add a guy like Greinke to the mix, man, with his experience, his background, and what he brings to the table with the Dodgers and Arizona Diamondbacks, and before that, it's just incredible. They got a great lineup, and I was a little surprised that he went to the Houston Astros. I wasn't shocked like a lot of people were that the Yankees weren't able to get him, because I just know that with his personality and what he said in the past, that Greinke wasn't ever going to be receptive to coming to the New York Yankees. So I wasn't one of those guys, even though I'm a Yankees fan, that was all over criticizing Brian Cashman for not bringing in Greinke. I'm pretty sure he did everything he could to try and get him. But if a guy doesn't want to pitch in New York, as a Yankee fan, nobody wants to see him in New York. organization can eat you alive, i.e. a Sonny Gray or Randy Johnson in the past, if you're not ready to pitch there.
And just to further give you some perspective on the significance of this move, Houston now has four starting pitchers in the top 13 in all of baseball in ERA. That's something that no other team can say about their starting rotation. Now, obviously, this was a team that before the deadline, as we talked about, was already making the playoffs and most likely going to make a deep run. But based on this trade and the roster they already have right now, are the Astros the favorites to win the World Series in your eyes?
Oh, yeah, I believe they are. I mean, like I said, I think the Dodgers, you know, will go back to the World Series for a third straight time. But the Astros, I don't know what their weakness is, to be quite honest with you. I mean, they got a great lineup. They've been there before. They're playoff tested. They're postseason ready. They got frontline starters, as you mentioned. You need three solid ones, maybe even two solid ones in the postseason, and they got that. We understand that the postseason is where, you know, pitching basically steps up and helps you win championships. No matter how great your offense is, you know, you got those two frontline starters, and now they got three frontline starters that can shut people down. I think, in my eyes, I give them the crack over the Yankees, and I'm a Yankees fan because the Yankees don't have a starting pitcher. And even the Dodgers, even though the Dodgers have great starting pitching with Walker Buehler and Ryu and, of course, Clayton Kershaw, who needs to step up in the postseason. But, yeah, Houston is the team to beat. But, you know, once again, it all comes down to staying healthy, winning the war of contrition, and it's got to come together at the right time, and that's in October.
Mike Hill here on Sports Talk Chicago. And, Mike, another team that made some headlines near the trade deadline was the Chicago Cubs, acquiring Nick Castellanos, David Phelps, Tony Kemp, and Brad Wick, all in separate moves to bolster their roster down the stretch. Now, do you feel that the Cubs showing at the deadline was a too little, too late type scenario for this team, or do these moves push Chicago over the hump when it comes to a deep run in the postseason?
No, I don't think you push them over the top. They still got too many issues, especially with the bullpen and things going on there and whatnot. It just has been an underachieving team. They're just trying to actually get into the postseason. We're trying to win the NL Central, getting a wild card out of that NL Central race, which is really tight with St. Louis and Milwaukee still in the mix. It's kind of been disappointing. I hate that people are blaming Joe Maddon for the issues after winning the World Series. I think he should almost get almost a lifetime pass for being the manager of that team, for getting Chicago over the hump and getting them into the postseason the last 4 or 5 years and whatnot. So that's been a remarkable accomplishment itself. But the team itself has been a bit of a disappointment this year, of course. And the Dodgers just too good. And not only the Dodgers, but the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves did a lot to upgrade themselves as well, especially with their, you know, their bullpen. And, you know, they still need some help with starting pitching-wise. But the Dodgers, still the team to beat in the National League. The Braves are right there, whatnot. Even the Nationals, a very surprising team right now in the NL East that's holding on to a wild card spot. I think they have a better shot right now over the Chicago Cubs when it comes to in the postseason and who has the hierarchy.
And, you know, what I find interesting about all of these trades for the Cubs is that it seems like they're trying to convince everyone that these moves can recapture what they had in years past and lead them on a long playoff run. But what about the opposite of that? What if maybe their roster today isn't as good as it once was in 2016? And in that same vein, how can this current Cubs roster compete against a team like the Dodgers in the NL or even the Astros should they reach the World Series? So again, when you think about all of this activity surrounding the deadline and the reality of where the Cubs stand, is this a case of a team trying to reopen a World Series window that's beginning to close?
Yeah, I mean, I think they haven't given up hope. I don't think that's not the case. I don't think this is a team that's like looking forward to the future. I mean, still got – you never know. I mean, they got talent. It's kind of wasn't true with now and injury was now. He's on the IL. But at the same time, they got a lot of good talent on the team with Chris Bryant and all those guys. It just has to come together at the right time. Any team can be hot at the right time and win a World Series. All you got to do is get in. And you got a chance. I mean, we've seen teams went from the wild card spot or whatnot, get in as the fourth or fifth team, get into the postseason in your certain division or conference, I should say, or Major League in the Western Division, Western Conference, I should say, in the East as well. But at the same time, league, I should say, I'm sorry, and just make that particular run. So if they can get hot in October, get in, get hot, everything kind of comes together. Anything is possible. And the Dodgers have shown that, you know what, even though they can get to the World Series, they can't win at all. So when you get there, you got to just win four games. That's it. Bottom line, win 4 to 7 games, and you win. So if you got a good week in you and a good couple of weeks, anything is possible. So I don't think they're giving up at all.
Overall, when you think about the Cubs and the Astros and the other teams that we didn't talk about here today, who to you are the winners of the trade deadline this year? Which teams made the most impactful trades?
Well, obviously, I think the Houston Astros, just from that cranky acquisition alone, I mean, that was crazy. The Atlanta Braves did a lot to upgrade their bullpen. I think that's very helpful to them as far as, like, what they're going to do as far as some of the help that they need. I think they still need some help when it comes to starting pitching, because you really can't name a frontline starter for them at all. But, you know, and even the Washington, the Nationals, because they had the worst bullpen in baseball. They still do, but to do a little bit of an upgrade in their bullpen absolutely helps them as well. So, I mean, those are three of the teams, but the Greinke trade, the acquisition, is the big move that actually, you know, despite what anybody else did, that put them over the top as far as I'm concerned, as far as being the team to beat in not just the American League, but in baseball.
Moving now to some NFL news, there seems to be two major storylines surrounding the league right now as the 2019 season is just around the corner. Now, first off, the league's top 100 list has been revealed, and of course, there's some controversy around certain players and where they were ranked on the list. I mean, Drew Brees was actually ranked higher than Patrick Mahomes based on last year's performance. Russell Wilson dropped to number 25, and DeAndre Hopkins, to the surprise of many, was not ranked inside the top 10. Now, obviously, this list is subjective and isn't going to get everything right, but do you agree with its evaluation of the NFL's talent heading into 2019?
No, obviously I don't agree with everything that, like, you know, that the fact that Drew Brees is ranked ahead of Patrick Mahomes based on what happened last season or looking ahead. I mean, because in fact, Patrick Mahomes is the reigning MVP, and then secondly, he's younger than Drew Brees. And I do believe that Drew Brees, I will say this about him. I think despite him being a first ballot Hall of Fame, I think he is still the most underrated superstar elite talent of his era, to be quite honest with you, because when you talk about a guy like Drew Brees, who owns all the passing records right now, that's won a Super Bowl, not only won a Super Bowl, but took the New Orleans Saints to the Super Bowl and actually won it, and always has that team in contention pretty much every single year when they have a semblance of a defense, you still don't consider him one of the greatest or top five quarterbacks of all time. And when you say something like that, or when that's being said, that makes me feel like he is being underrated or undervalued. Still think about Aaron Rodgers. Still think about Peyton Manning. Even though he's been retired a couple of years, Tom Brady. You think about Aaron Rodgers, but don't think about Drew Brees as a top five quarterback of all time. And I think he should be at least in that discussion, but people don't bring him up. But having said that, I still don't think at the time, you know, if you consider, you know, top five players in the league today, I would still take, you know, a Patrick Mahomes. As far as talent, what he was able to do last year and his potential in that Kansas City Chiefs offense over Drew Brees right now. But then the rest of these guys, I mean, you know, like, it's all subjective. I mean, it's their peers, the players that are making these decisions. They're making these decisions and voting for their friends. They're voting for their teammates. They're voting for people who they like. And then some of them they're not voting for because maybe they just have a personal beef with them and they don't like them. So, the good thing about it is, you know, the players are making their decisions or whatever. But the bad thing about it is it's just subjective and it's not based on anything that's factual. You know what I mean? It's like, but we are talking about it. So that's the one thing that the NFL Network wanted to do. They wanted to talk about it. We're talking about this list. Just like we talk about the Madden rankings. I think they take the Madden rankings a little bit more seriously than they take these top 100 rankings, to be quite honest with you, because that's a direct shot at their particular skills and not, you know, pitting them against one another.
Now, the second storyline that I had wanted to get to involves the NFL as a whole and a continued decline in their ratings. 2018 proved to be a better year as the numbers were up 5%, but they were still lower than what we saw in 2015. Now, there could be many reasons behind the decline, but one theory that we've seen in particular has to do with our current president and his supporters boycotting the league because of the national anthem protests. The claim is that by players kneeling for the anthem, they're disrespecting those who fought to keep this country safe. As an Air Force veteran yourself, do you feel the same way? And if not, what's your message to those who think the protests signal disrespect?
No, I don't feel the same way. I do believe I'm a big, big advocate for players, not only athletes, but entertainers and people in high-profile positions, people who are influenced to use their platforms to speak out against what they feel is injustice or inequality in this country or anything that's going on. I do believe that athletes are more than just athletes. I don't believe in the whole subject of somebody saying just shut up and dribble, because that's not what we're made for. I mean, we're not just broadcasters. You're not just a sportscaster. You're a human being. You're also a citizen who has a right to vote. These athletes have a right to vote. They still, when they take off those uniforms, take off those helmets, when they get off the basketball court, when they're not practicing or whatever, when they're not signing autographs, they still walk out in the community and they're seen as a black man or a woman, or they're seen as a minority in some kind of way. Or, you know, even if there's a white person who might feel discriminated against in any kind of way or not feeling equal to or whatnot, they still have a right to speak up and a right to protest. I was in this country, and yes, I respect the flag, but I also believe that I fought for this country so that you can have the right to protest when you feel like there's inequality doing that. So as long as we're in America, as long as we have a democracy to do things like that, peaceful protests, I will never have any kind of ill feelings towards or ill regards towards whatnot. Now, if you're going to go out there and you're going to fight and scream and you're going to burn down buildings, or you're going to do things like we saw over the weekend in El Paso, or we saw in Dayton, Ohio, whatever, you're trying to make a political message that way, of course, I have no regard or any kind of love or sympathy for anybody that takes that type of matter in their own hands or whatnot. But yes, I do believe that the NFL ratings probably did go down a little bit because people were protesting, because they felt like there were people who were kneeling, like Eric Reid, of course, Colin Kaepernick before him, and that there are people who were upset because of that, and then you get the president calling them sons of bitches or whatnot. But at the same time, I also believe there's another side of why the ratings went down in the NFL, and they're not looking at that enough. A lot of black people stopped watching the NFL as well because they felt like the injustice or the treatment that Colin Kaepernick got after he was out of the league, and because of the ban or whatever, and because they felt like he was being blackballed, I felt like because of that, they stopped looking at the National Football League as well. So it wasn't just because, you know, there are certain people who didn't like the protests of Colin Kaepernick, felt like, okay, well, we're just going to ban ourselves from watching the NFL, and we're going to protest by not doing it. We're not going to watch the game. There were also other people on the other side who was looking at the treatment of Colin Kaepernick, they feel, by NFL owners for not allowing him to come back in the league, and the big conspiracy or whatever that they had against him for keeping him out of playing a professional sport. So I look at it both ways.
Do you see Kaepernick ever taking the field again in the NFL?
I said this on my radio show, when I had a radio show a couple of years ago, when this was going out, I said that Colin Kaepernick would never play in the NFL again. I knew it. I figured that would be the case. Of course, you can't really prove the collusion that we know is actually happening in the NFL. You can't prove it because you don't have a string of messages from all the 32 owners basically saying that this is going to be the case. But it's not hard to tell. It is not hard to see that there is something that is going on when it comes to this man, because his skill set was still at a good level. It wasn't a top quarterback, but when you see some of the quarterbacks who have been given second and third chances, who have been given opportunities to come in and play in the NFL, whether it's a backup or a third-string quarterback, and these names that are out there, and Colin Kaepernick can't even get a visit, he can't get a meeting with a team, he can't get a tryout, he can't get an audition, it lets you know that there's some kind of collusion when it comes to all of that. So right now, because of the climate of the country, and I do believe some of the climate is changing a little bit because, you know, a lot of times we're becoming numb to what's happening in society, whatnot, and people are starting to realize that there is an issue in this country. You think about what Meek Mill went through. You think about even with ASAP Rocky over in Sweden or whatever, whatnot, and you see that there is problems that we have here in this country that because Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid and others like him brought to the table, and that should have been the focus in the first place, not necessarily the action, but the reason behind the action. And now we're starting to look at that and realize, oh yeah, okay, see what he's talking about. There needs to be prison reform. There needs to stop being police brutality. Now that we see that, if that's the case, and that he was actually standing up, ironically kneeling for something, a bigger cause himself, then maybe somebody, some team, some owner, some organization will have the balls to allow this man to live the life that he wants to live, and that's by playing in the National Football League. So if you would have asked me today, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but maybe in a year or two, Colin Kaepernick may get a tryout, and we'll see what happens then.
And as we take a closer look now into your personal career, what motivated you to join the Air Force Reserves in the first place, and how did you then make the transition from the armed forces to a career in sports media?
I went into the military because at that particular time, you know, I wasn't ready for college. You know, I needed a little bit more discipline where I grew up. There was a lot of things that was happening in my life, a lot of things that happened in my family life that just, I realized that if I would have gone to college, I wouldn't have stayed in college. Discipline-wise, maturity-wise, not necessarily I was intelligent, but I wasn't ready. I wasn't focused to do the things I needed to do while I was in college. So I went into the military and also saw I had a couple of cousins that was in the military as well in the Air Force. As a matter of fact, that I looked up to and I saw the way they did it, the route they went. And that's the way I decided to do it. And it worked out and turned out to be one of the best decisions I ever made in my life because it led to opportunities that I would not have gotten had I not been in the military. I wouldn't have had the focus or the discipline to eventually go to school and to be in the job that I'm in right now. And I look back at the military and a lot of things, a lot of insights, a lot of views, a lot of the things that I do every single day, I still instill in myself when it comes to being in broadcasting. And that comes from the military. You know, like being on time, being structured or whatever, being respectful to others or whatnot. So all of that stuff, I got to give credit to the military. So that led to, you know, me getting my job in broadcasting because I was focused. I was determined. And the day I got out of the military, the day I got my first job in broadcasting, and that was almost 25 years ago. I've been the happiest man ever since.
And as I had mentioned in your bio, you had started on local TV before a job at Fox Sports Net. And then in 2004, you had gotten your big break becoming a host on ESPN and ESPN Radio. Tell me about when you found out that you'd be working at ESPN, and what was it like to be a